من الآخرين وأصحاب الشمال ما أصحاب الشمال في سموم وحميم وظل من يحموم لا بارد ولا كريم إنهم كانوا قبل ذلك مترفين وكانوا يصرون على الحنث العظيم وكانوا يقولون أئذا متنا وكنا ترابا وعظاما أئذا متنا وكنا ترابا وعظاما أئنا لمبعوثون أو آباؤنا الأولون قل إن الأولين والآخرين لمجموعون إلى ميقات يوم معلوم ثم إنكم أيها الضالون المكذبون لآكلون من شجر من زقوم فمالئون منها البطون فشاربون عليه من الحميم فشاربون شرب الهيم هذا نزلهم يوم الدين نحن خلقناكم فلولا تصدقون أفرأيتم ما تمنون أأنتم تخلقونه أم نحن الخالقون نحن قدرنا بينكم الموت وما نحن بمسبوقين على أن نبدل أمثالكم وننشئكم فيما لا تعلمون ولقد علمتم النشأة الأولى فلولا تذكرون أفرأيتم ما تحرثون أأنتم تزرعونه أم نحن الزارعون لو نشاء لجعلناه حطاما فظلتم تفكهون إنا لمغرمون بل نحن محرومون أفرأيتم الماء الذي تشربون أأنتم أنزلتموه من المزن أم نحن المنزلون لو نشاء جعلناه أجاجا فلولا تشكرون أفرأيتم النار التي تورون أأنتم أنشأتم شجرتها أم نحن المنشئون نحن جعلناها تذكرة ومتاعا للمقوين فسبح باسم ربك العظيم فلا أقسم بمواقع النجوم وإنه لقسم لو تعلمون عظيم إنه لقرآن كريم في كتاب.
صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. Inshallah, we're going to start tonight's program with the recitation of the Holy Quran. If I can invite Brother Ali Hamdani with the loud salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والفجر وليال عشر والشفع والوتر والليل إذا يسر هل في ذلك قسم لذي هجر ألم تر كيف فعل ربك بعاد إرم ذات العماد التي لم يخلق مثلها في البلاد وثمود الذين جابوا الصخر بالواد وفرعون ذي الأوتاد الذين تغوا في البلاد فأكثر فيها الفساد فصب عليهم ربك سوط عذاب إن ربك لبالمرصاد فأما الإنسان إذا ما ابتلاه ربه فأكرمه ونعمه فيقول ربي أكرمن وأما إذا ما ابتلاه فقدر عليه رزقه فيقول ربي أهانن كلا بل لا تكرمون اليتيم ولا تحاضون على طعام المسكين وتأكلون التراث أكلا لما وتحبون المال حبا جما كلا إذا دكت الأرض دكا دكا وجاء ربك والملك صفا صفا وجيء يومئذ بجهنم يومئذ يتذكر الإنسان وأنى له الذكرى يقول يا ليتني قدمت لحياتي فيومئذ لا يعذب عذابه أحد ولا يوثق وثاقه أحد يا أيتها النفس المطمئنة ارجعي إلى ربك راضية مرضية فادخلي في عبادي وادخلي جنتي صدق الله العلي العظيم صلوا على محمد وآل محمد.
JazakAllah khairan. Inshallah, I just wanted to make a few quick announcements before I invite Sheikh. Our next program is going to be this upcoming Friday, which will be the commemoration of the passing of Imam Ruhollah Khomeini. And inshallah, the week after that will be our next program on the 10th of June, which will inshallah be the Waladat of Imam Ridha. Salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. I've also had a few people reach out about finding out more updates on our program. So if you're not already, we do have WhatsApp groups available where event announcements are made. Also, if you guys haven't had the chance to see, there's books in the back, including Juz of the Quran, as well as other recommended books by Sheikh Osama and the Hadi team. And we also want to make the announcement, alhamdulillah, as you guys can see, we have many children in the audience. So. If you guys do need to, there's nursing rooms downstairs as well as a place for the kids to run around with the program being broadcasted from downstairs. So if anyone needs to utilize that, please don't hesitate. Inshallah, with that, we'll invite Sheikh with a loud salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد صلى على محمد وآل محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. So welcome back to our Good Life lecture series. I hope everybody's doing well. Inshallah, what we're going to do today is to take a little bit of a break from the topic which we've been covering for a while now. What's the topic we've been covering for a while now? What happens is, in Islam, we have life skills that we're supposed to learn. One of the most important life skills that we're supposed to learn, and then also, of course, teach to our children, are that there will be gender-specific roles once you get married. Later on, there are some responsibilities that you have which are purely yours, but then there are some which are gender-specific. So what happens is, in order for a couple to experience Allah's best, one of the areas, those life skills that needs to be covered and covered properly, is the concept of leadership in the chain of command. That needs to be resolved. In order for a couple to experience Allah's best, you can't have anarchy. You can't have chaos. As Amir al-Mu'mineen says, he says this, La budda linnas min amir. People must have a leader. Walaikum as-salam wa rahmatullah. They must have a leader. Barran aw fajir. Whether the leader is a good leader or a bad leader, but you must have leadership. You can't have anarchy. What happens in Islam is that we're taught that the man is supposed to be the wali of the house. The ayat of the Quran, one of which I will share, talks about or calls the man, refers to him as the qawwam, right? That pillar, that manager, that leader of the house. On the other side, Islam stresses that a woman, in order for her to experience Allah's best, she's supposed to be a rayhana or a flower, right? So there are gender-specific roles. We don't apologize for them. Actually, we feel in order for people to experience Allah's best, they need to know what these things are. Allow me, brothers and sisters, just to share. One of them is the verse of Quran. This is Surah 4, verse number 34, where Allah says this about the role of men. Ar-rijal qawwamuna 'ala an-nisa. Men are those leaders, those maintainers of women. Bima faddala Allah ba'dahum 'ala ba'd, because of the advantage that Allah has granted some over others. Wa bima anfaqu min amwalihim. Two reasons Allah gives. One is that edge that they needed in order to be able to lead. And secondly is that they are going to be spenders. So we're training our boys later to say that my wife has zero financial responsibility. I'm the man, I provide, right? And to be the leader and to make those tough decisions for the family. The Quran also says what a righteous woman should be like. We've been talking extensively about the idea of being good soldiers. The Quran says this, فَالصَّالِحَاتُ, so righteous women, صالح women, are قَانِتَات, they're obedient, right? They're the good soldier. Now, we also have learned, this is from Amir al-Mu'mineen, where he says, إِنَّ الْمَرْأَ رَيْحَانَ, the woman is a flower. So, and these are things that need to be explained. We need to understand what this means in order for us to experience this. وَلَيْسَتْ بِقَهْرَمَانَ, and a woman isn't a maid. What does that mean? How? These are things, life skills that we want to learn about, and we want to make sure that our children know before they get married. What we're getting also at the same time as we're learning how to raise our children is reminders on how to model these behaviors. How to model these behaviors. So that was our main topic, but what happens is we're taking a break from that. Why? Because now we're commemorating the martyrdom of a true champion. I'd like to spend some time talking tonight about the life, legacy, and contributions of this leader, this incredible leader whose name is Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam. Salawat, please. And allow me to extend my condolences to all of the mu'mineen and mu'minat all over the world, all of our maraja, the leader, our master, sahib al-zaman, and of course you, dear brothers and sisters, who are the members of the Hadi family, and also those members of the Hadi family who are online, who are with us. Now, there is one part of the imam that's well known. And you and I, we want to make sure that we understand this and we don't develop a bunker mentality. There is a dimension of the imam which is known for all Muslims. All Muslims know our imam for his contributions. He's known amongst all Muslims as a man of God. Others have written about him as well. It's not only us as Shia. A man of God, a man of taqwa, a man of vast knowledge. The teacher of teachers, when it comes to the imams of some of the madhahib, of the brothers of the Ahlul Sunnah, the teacher of teachers, Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. So he's known for that. That's known about the imam. On a personal level, his taqwa, his irfan, his connection with God, his zuhd, and this being disattached from the dunya, all of these things are also, again, well known. The idea that his contributions and his legacy are not limited even to the Islamic sciences. Because the Islamic scientists, the imam, of course, he played that huge role in jurisprudence, fiqh, jurisprudence, tafsir, hadith, so many of the Islamic sciences. But what we find is that the students of the imam are individuals who, even when it comes to the natural sciences, they also have contributions. These are students of the imam. So this side of the imam, of course, is very well known. For us as Shia now, if you want to say strictly from the point of us being Shia, we say that he's an imam, which means he is higher than the anbiya. Higher than the anbiya. Of course, other than his grandfather, and the last and the greatest of the Anbiya, our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So that, as I mentioned, is the side of the imam which is known. But there's another side of the imam. A side which isn't known as much. A side that needs to be introduced. If we want to understand who our imam is, big picture, make sense of the details, this other side of the imam needs to be introduced to the people, to ourselves first and then everyone else. This side of the imam is where we see the imam as a strategic thinker, as a commander, as the face of the resistance. The Sayyidul Muqawama of his time is Imam Sadiq. As the person who goes mano a mano with some of the most savage tawaghit and best them at their game, this is Imam Sadiq. Now, we need to learn about this side of the imam if we want to understand and appreciate his legacy and then get those big lessons from his life, and also to be able to fit all those details that we have, because there's so much that's out there on the imam. We might all be able to give a lecture on the imam, but then to put all the pieces together, we need to see what the strategy of the imam was. What was he doing? Where was he going? What was he trying to do? So this side, of course, is very important. Now, in order for us to understand this properly, what I've tried to do is to break tonight's lectures up into five parts. You can call them five questions, just for someone like myself to be able to organize my thoughts more effectively if I kind of have, okay, well, we're going to address this and we're going to address this, right? Like that. So I'd like to address five areas, if Allah gives tawfiq. One of them, in order for us to understand that unknown side of the imam, we want to address what were the main responsibilities of all imams. Imam Sadiq is an imam. We mentioned that there is this side of the imams. What were some of their main responsibilities? If we know that, the main responsibilities of the imam, the main strategy of the imam, the second question is going to be, well, why is Imam Hussein, different. Jazakumullah khairan. Thank you. Salawat, please. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala. So let's say the imams have, let's say, three major responsibilities that I'm going to talk about today. And based on that, they have a certain strategy, a certain way that they're proceeding. Then suddenly we're going to see that the life of Imam Hussein seems to be an exception to this rule. So why is it, even if it's in just a couple of sentences, why is it that Imam Hussein was different? After that, we're going to return back to Imam Sadiq. When we turn back to Imam Sadiq, our third question is going to be, well, what was unique to the time of Imam Sadiq? What was the strategy of the Imam like during the time of the Umayyad dynasty? After that, we know that our Imam, this is one of the Imams who lived one of the longest life of the Ahlul Bayt, wasn't murdered early, is Imam Sadiq. So he is also there in a contemporary of the Abbasid dynasty, which are again two of the most savage of the Abbasids. Our Imam's going to be a contemporary to them. How does our Imam's strategy change from the time of Bani Umayyah? What was his strategy during the time of Bani Umayyah? How does he shift gears? What is he trying to do now in the time of the Abbasids? And then finally, the last question would be, how did the Imam, we have a concept in Islam of finishing strong. I'll share the hadith inshallah later. What did our Imam do, even in his death, to help advance the cause of Islam? So inshallah, we'll begin with all of these, but we'll start with salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. The first thing we're going to start off with are the duties of all of the imams, which is going to, once we understand their overall duties, big picture, what were they trying to do, then we'll be able to make sense of the strategy and where the imams are trying to go. Some of these require a little explanation. Allow me just at first to read off three of these responsibilities. Number one duty of the imam, and these are going to come again to some duties for us, explaining and teaching and promoting pure Islam, trying to get the maximum of mankind to be able to hear the true message of Islam as is. Why was that so important? Number two is that our imams are going up against opposition. There are some people who, if Islam is taught as is, it'll conflict with their interests. They've taught another version of Islam. They've distorted the realities and haqa'iq of Islam. So number two, duty number two of the imam is going to be that our imam is actively pushing back against the distortions in the religion that would put people to sleep. Islam is a revolutionary religion. It'll liberate mankind, liberate the globe. It could have happened before Imam Mahdi, but if you distort Islam, what happens? So pushing back against this. And the third one, which is, it was began in the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen. It continued, but then it expanded and it evolved in the time of Imam Sadiq, was the training of the human pillars. What does that mean? The human pillars. That elite group of Shia who were carrying or doing the heavy lifting for the Imam. What happens with these three groups? So, we'll start with a salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, if I don't drop my water. We said the first duty of the imam is that our imam is supposed to spread true Islam to the entire Islamic world, to everyone on earth, to try and get as many people to hear the message of Islam. If the imam does this, if true Islam comes to the ears of mankind, the way that Imam Mahdi wants to take over the world is not that it's a coup d'etat, not that people hate Islam, don't know what Islam is, it's just the Muslims rush in and they're bigger and badder and stronger and better military, but actually that there's an awakening that happens. The masses get to know what Islam is. If that happens, if the masses get to know Islam as is, one of the things that does is it creates a longing in the people for the good life, the right way to live, and makes them detest the current savage, wicked, uncivil way of that they're living right now. Let me give some historical examples, and then after that, we'll try and move on. For instance, this is not different, by the way, between our imam or the prophets. Some of the teachings of the Anbiya now have become mainstream. Our Anbiya have all taught mankind, from the beginning, the idea that the people have a role in determining their own destiny. We've been through times where before you would just have one dictator, or you would have a royal family, blue blood. Some people in England still believe in that. I mean, for you and I, it was like, kind of, why did, you know, we pay somebody, they're just because of blue blood. But some people still believe in that, right? But what happens is, if you teach Islam as is, the idea that humanity are all brothers, we're all from the same tree, we're all the children of Bani Adam. Dignity for all. Right? These karama, these ayat of the Quran, not something different, right? Not being a slave. Why should there be tyranny? Why should one group of mankind be subjugated, be the third world, be exploited, and other people live off of the blood of other civilizations? Why should that be okay? What happens is, these teachings of Islam, true Islam, if they're taught to the masses, if they're, it creates longing. But we said also the imam would have to teach what true Islam was and true Islam wasn't. Because if you twist the teachings of Islam, the teachings of Islam can be something that puts people to sleep. Let's say the lofty concept of tawakkul, which makes you the strongest person on earth, makes you a giant killer, makes you, like Nabi Dawood, able to go up against Goliath. If it's taught in the wrong way, it can lead to me sitting and relaxing and saying, God takes care of everything. Instead of it liberating me, it puts me to sleep. Let's say you teach Tawheed, the oneness of Allah, but you don't teach it in the Islamic way, which says that not only don't believe in another deity, Tawheed means you don't obey anyone in disobedience of Allah. And if you do, this is shirk. But let's say I take that away. People don't have that. So they're only focused on fighting against stone idols. But then normalizing ties with Israel is something which is completely okay. Right? So one time Islam is a liberating force. And you go to the jurisprudence, to the rulings, to how to live life, to how to interact with others, right? So one of the jobs of the imam is actively pushing back against the distortions and making sure that Islam is taught as is. Now, if that happens, the people start to want an alternative. If people knew how terrible the predatory banking system is right now, and that you have another system which literally, if just some of your concepts were carried out, you wouldn't have one poor person on the earth. The concept of anfal, that's just one amongst many. Then who wouldn't say, well, why live in a system where I'm in debt from the beginning of my life until the end? My children will be inheriting my debt. Right? Why not live better? Why not experience God's best? Right? So it will create longing. Number two, though, is that, because, let me mention this as well. That growth that should happen results, the results are that mankind is going to rise up. لِيَقُومَ النَّاسِ بِالْقِسْطِ. It won't be the case that Islam just has to impose itself. Mankind will be so exhausted of these tyrannical systems, they're looking for a solution. They want liyakuma nas, people rise up, the masses rise up for justice. Now, that's one thing. Now, the other thing, though, is that just teaching the proper teachings of Islam or just making sure that people aren't following deviated Islam, that's not enough. The imams also had to train human pillars, to build human pillars. people who would carry this message, who believed in the Imam, not just longed for his government, and will say, well, that will be great. I just can't wait until there's a savior. The Imams were looking for that group of mu'mineen and mu'minat who would resist for the Imam. I believe in this so much that if it takes sacrifice of myself, my family, in order to have mankind liberated, I know there's a price to be paid, but I will coordinate with my Imam, I will go upstream, I will go against the current system and work to liberate the Imam. So the Imams had to spend that time training these people. And as I mentioned, from the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen, there were these individuals. Of course, during the time of Imam Sadiq, the numbers are going to expand. We're gonna get really close. Now, what I've just mentioned, those first three principles would lead to a gradual, let's say we had that, Islam spread all over the world. There was no one who was uninformed about the religion. There were a group of people who were exemplified Islam's teachings in their personal lives, trained, spiritual, religious, practicing, unafraid, ready to sacrifice, coordinated. What this would lead to would be that the world, the grounds would be prepared for the world to accept the coming of the Imam, and it wouldn't be brought like a massacre that they just had to. The only people we'd be fighting back against the Imam would be people who were willing slaves. I like the system. I want to be a slave. I'll die for my Imam. Otherwise, why be a slave? Islam's here to liberate. Now, question number two, though. So why then was Imam Hussein different? If you've told me that the masses have to want it, Islam needs to be spread, everybody needs to know, longing at least needs to be there, and then yes, with your group of individuals, you go and you liberate the globe. In the time of Imam Hussein, there wasn't longing from the masses. Yes, the Imam, he tried to train that small group, and he did train that small group, but to say the longing, the readiness was there, the world was ready to be handed over to Ahlul Bayt. Now, it wasn't like that. What was different in the time of Imam Hussein? Alayhi wassalam. Even though, of course, I'm just going to talk about it very briefly. During the time of Imam Hussein, a situation arose. A situation for which Islam had given a responsibility. If Islam was to come to a point where there wasn't just deviation, Islam itself was in danger and need of a reset, then there was a responsibility. And we've gone over some of those hadith before, you and I. We remember the words of the Imam where he says that, the beautiful words of the Imam, وَعَلَى الْإِسْلَامَ السَّلَامُ. Islam itself will be finished if it continues this way, and the ummah has a leader like Yazid, right? So then the responsibility, which is again mentioned in the hadith, was that everyone was supposed to go over and go against that tyrant. We also remember that if the believers had done their responsibility, there were actually two possible outcomes for the qiyam of Imam Hussein. Sayyid al-Shuhada didn't just go to become shaheed and then with his blood to finish Bani Umayyah. No. There were two possibilities. One distinct possibility was that the people would not assist the Imam and would end in a bloody struggle and the Imam and his family would be killed and captured, but Islam would be preserved. The other possibility, and we've talked about this before, which could have happened, was that even some of the people, if they had done their responsibility, the Imam could have won. Some people failed in their responsibility. We've talked about that before, but just you and I just reminding ourselves. So it wasn't just the case, no, the Imam, if he could have taken power and established the kingdom of God on the earth, he would have done that. But of course, people failed the Imam, and the Imam was martyred, but Islam was saved. Okay, so now the next question. Okay, the Imams are moving in this slow, gradual approach, building up, and now three Imams have been working consecutively. So after the Shahada of Imam Hussein, Islam was crushed. The Shia had gotten to an extent that there were three left resisting, we find from the Hadith. Three. Everybody else had been broken. Not that they didn't believe in God or believe in Al-Bayt, but the resisting being a true Shia was so difficult, there were three left. Then with blood, sweat, and tears, our Imam, starting with Imam Sajjad, and then after that, followed by Imam Baqir, they started to nurse Islam back to life. We owe our lives to Imam Sajjad. He slowly and effectively and creatively worked until he was able to create a situation for Imam Baqir. Now in the time of Imam Baqir, again the teachings are spreading. Islam is getting out. Remember, the time of Imam Sadiq is when we're going to have the 4,000 students. But still, even in the time of Imam Baqir, there's a lot of information out there. People are getting to know. When the Imam goes to Medina, people are coming, seeing, right? Islam is spreading. They're still working on that small group of believers who are going to be there. The Ahlul Bayt now have a prophecy. They can see from the social and political climate that if the believers can do their responsibility, we can plan for revolution at the time of Imam Sadiq. And if you look in some of our hadith, he's referred to as the Qa'im. The believers, of course, this is the inner circle, those who knew the secrets of the Imam, they were very hopeful that inshallah, the kingdom of God will be established on the earth in this time. And when I'm going to mention some of the hadith, we got very close, but something happened. So what's different now about the time of Imam Sadiq? Because he's following the general strategy, but we're winning. The message is being spread. The groups are being developed. That small core has now been developed to a great extent. What happened? Because our Imam began his mission in the time of one of the most savage of the tawaghit, Hisham bin Abdul Malik. We're talking about a terrible tawghiyah and powerful, evil, wicked, savage. Our Imam began in his time. But what happened was, Bani Umayyah had started to run their course. How much dhulm can you do? How much can you oppress people? How much can you take advantage of people? How much can you exploit people? How much debauchery, not living an Islamic lifestyle? The people are starting to get tired. So those strategies of the Imam to introduce Islam as is, what real Islam is, there is an alternative to build that network. Our Imam now has, Imam Sadiq now, has followers all over the Muslim world. Again, some of these people are ideological Shias. They believe in the Imam, they accept the Imam, but now not necessarily that everyone all over the Islamic world are ready to resist for the Imam, but the idea was that the Imam's workers and his inner circle would be able to pull people together and from Medina to march on to Sham to topple the government. Things had gotten so good for the Muslims. This is just an example. So the Imams would go over and they would teach what Islam was. They had also introduced the concept of imamate. Once things were already ready, they would introduce themselves as the Imam. Remember, introducing yourself as the Imam during that time, that's a death sentence. But in the time of Imam Sadiq, the Umayyads are weak, corrupt, evil, people are tired of them, longing for an alternative. Our Imam is pushing, the believers are pushing. One of the reports is this. Our Imam now in Hajj, this just told you how close we were. Our Imam is in Hajj. The Muslims are gathered from all over the world. And our Imam is over there in front of the world. So this is how close it is. Introduce the concept of imamat. We have the followers. People are tired. What are we supposed to do? The Imam introduces himself. He says this, Ayyuhan Nas, and the Imam was repeating this. The hadith says, the Imam is there in Hajj, Muslims all over the world, turning in four different directions, shouting at the top of his voice, let the world hear this. What did the Imam say? Ya Ayyuhan Nas, O people, Inna Rasulullah kana al-Imam. The Prophet of Allah was an Imam. Thumma kana Ali ibn Abi Talib. After him was Ali. Thumma al-Hasan, then Hasan was the Imam. Thumma al-Husayn, then Husayn was the Imam. Thumma Ali ibn al-Husayn, Imam Zain al-Abidin was the Imam. Thumma Muhammad ibn Ali, and then finally, me, I'm the Imam. So we're very close. The conditions, the social political conditions are there for our Imam to be the Qa'im. But what happens? Now, this is a lesson for all of us and a reminder for all of us, because whenever an imam suffers a defeat, it's always us. It's not that the imam wasn't perfect. It's not that Islam didn't have the right message. It's always the followers. We didn't do enough. We didn't have enough taqwa. We didn't have enough iman. We weren't able to do it right. We weren't able to do our responsibility. What happened in the time of Imam Sadiq, who went from this way where he's openly calling for his imamate? We're almost there. Finish off the enemy. Military leadership. Sayyid al-Muqawama. What happened? The Abbasids beat us to the punch. The Abbasids are also taking advantage of this. People were furious with Bani Umayyah. So much dhulm, right? The Abbasids also are from the lineage of the Prophet. The Abbasids are also giving religious slogans, wearing black. The Abbasids took advantage. The followers of Imam Sadiq helped create the grounds for that big movement and change. It's ready, it's ripe. But then the Abbasids beat them to the punch, and the Abbasids were able to take power. The Abbasids were able to take power. Now, things changed. What was that lesson, though? The lesson of being that Shia who's ready for the imam, who can do their responsibility. We've heard this story, that a man came to the imam from Khurasan, and he told the imam, he said that, why don't you do qiyam? Why don't you rise up? The imam told the man, he said, there's an oven right here. Bismillah. The man turned to the imam, astaghfirullah, sorry. I meant qiyam, you kill me, astaghfirullah, sorry. Another Shia comes in, Harun al-Makki. The imam tells him, go. That man walks in to the oven. The imam then turns and sits and talks with the other man, Khurasani. So tell me, what's going on? What's Iran like? What's that? And they start having a conversation. And this guy's probably in his own mind, oh, what happened to that guy? After that, the imam tells him, he says, go over to that oven. He goes overseas. Harun is sitting there, nothing happening to him. He says to the Khurasani, he says, how many do I have like this? He said, not one. 100,000 before, not one, right? Then the imam said, we know better when the time is. The Shia, the followers. Now, next one is, why did he shift gears and how did he shift gears? Because up until now, the imam is pushing for an immediate solution. Imam Sajjad, Imam Baqir, Imam Sadiq, all pushing that the time of Imam Sadiq is the time, right? We're pushing towards that time. What happened after the time of the Abbasids? When this first happened and the Abbasids took power, we see that a shift came in the strategy of the imam. Now our imam begins to work for the long term. Why? There's a couple of factors to help us understand. We're going to still have to see, well, what was his strategy then, right? But our imam changes strategy, openly declaring his imamat, to now a long-term strategy. What happens? Our imam sees that the Abbasids have now come into power and the masses don't have that same longing. Before this, if you were to talk badly about Bani Umayyah, to say they were terrible, everybody, yes, they killed my brother, they imprisoned this person, they stole this, right? But now with the new government, with the alternative, now the people have hope. Maybe the Abbasids will live up to their campaign promises. They say they're religious. Aren't they part of the family of the Prophet? So one, the masses, that readiness that was there had been built up, ready is no longer there. Number two, the Abbasids aren't an old, weak, corrupt government that's ready to fall, that's become so big it can't even manage its affairs. No, Bani Israel, the Abbasids just came into power, a revolutionary movement, looking to see who's going to stand up against them. We've talked about this before. They even sent some of their people. We talked about this, so I'm not going to go into it. Some of their people with letters to Imam Sadiq. Let's test the grounds and see if the Imam's ready to do Qiyam. So they're vigilant. They're looking. They're not like Bani Umayyah who are crumbling. No, they're not like that. What else is there? The Shia. The Shia. Some of the Shia were martyred during the initial campaign. Some of the Shia seems that it was the case that they abandoned ship once the Abbasids came in. You see, there's a big challenge that happened with the Abbasids. The Abbasids were the opposition and they were with Imam Sadiq. The Abbasids are Hashimis. They know the Imam. They know his tactics. They used to get financial help from the Imam. Some of them would get financial help. So they know the players. They know the people. So now the enemy's changed, but now the enemy knows you, your strategy, how you operate, who gives money, who brings letter, because we were all part of the opposition. We were literally fighting in the same camp. Some of the Shia, once it got difficult, it seemed that they abandoned ship again. You've heard that story, where the man comes to see the Imam in Medina, Imam Sadiq now. So that first story is the time of, we learned before about the time of the Bani Umayyah, how the Imam in Hajj, how bold. Now in the time of the Abbasids, man comes to Medina and he asks the Imam, he says, how come you don't do Qiyam? It seems from the context that his house, where the man met him, it's not safe to speak there. The Imam says, let's go outside of Medina. They go outside of Medina. They offer their prayers. Nobody around. The Imam said, if I had as many followers as those sheep, he points to some sheep, if I had real Shia like them, I would have done Qiyam. The man says, I counted. He says, there were 17 sheep. So now, the Bani, doing Qiyam now, when they know you, they're looking. And Safah or Mansur Dawan, ooh, those were Tawagheed. If you thought the others were law and order Tawagheed, these new Tawagheed are something else. So now the strategy of the Imam changes. What does the Imam have to do? Does he give up the struggle? No. Now I have to go back to the drawing board. One of the things the Imam has to do is to continue to teach and to preach what true Islam is. And for the first part of the Abbasid dynasty, he's able to do that. Meaning for the first time when the Abbasids are ruling, in the beginning, before they had established themselves, our Imam could breathe, he could do some of this. Preach what true Islam is. When you preach what true Islam is, it shows that these people are incompetent, they're the enemy, they're fasiq, they're liars, right? Once you preach what true Islam is, the Imam continues to do that. He also has to go and to train or build again that group of Shia from the beginning. But now he's working for the long term. That readiness, the masses, that hunger, that's no longer there. So Imam goes back to the drawing board with that. Now, what happens is that the enemy continue to watch our Imam. Once Mansur gets established, or two ruthless brothers, during the time of the first brother, our Imam is able to move to a certain extent. But again, now with a lot of taqiyya, but he's pushing and he's operating. The enemy now, once they finish crushing Bani Umayyah, cleaning up the thing, now they can turn their attention to the Imam. So now they want to come after the Imam. Now you'll see the same Imam who before would have 4,000 people speaking. They know the techniques of the Imam. When the Imam's not just an academic. When he's teaching tafsir or fiqh or akhlaq or dua, he's going somewhere. So they limit the Imam. You hear those stories where the guy says, because our Imam was exiled twice. I wanted to go over and see the imam before. The imam is speaking. 4,000 people able to benefit. Now when you want to see the imam goes to the city. I can't because of such heavy surveillance. Several days, not able to see him. Finally, I pretend to sell cucumbers. You've heard the story. And then as I'm walking with my cucumbers, come to the house of the imam. You guys need cucumbers? He comes inside, gets to ask a question. It's like that now. Mansoor is completely on top of things. Still, the imam continues to push, and now the authorities begin to summon the imam, arrest the imam, attack the house of the imam, burn the house of the imam. Till finally, because they can't get an outward reason to go after the imam, but they see that the imam is making all these activities, he's working for the, he's that dangerous. They remember his political acumen from before, they know he's still the same, they decide to poison the imam. Now, we also mentioned, the last point was the idea of finishing strong. So our imam has been leading the resistance. He's now about to hand it over to Imam Kadhim. What can the imam do, even with his death and his martyrdom, which isn't open? Right? It's not like a Karbala for people to see, well, Mansoor is so evil, so wicked. What does our imam do? Two things. One of them is that the imam says, for 7 years, I want you to mourn me at Hajj. 7 years. 7 years. Remember, the seerah of Ahlul Bayt, once somebody dies, the Ahlul Bayt shed a few tears, like let's say our prophet for Ibrahim, his son. He sheds a few tears, but not continuing, going to the grave, mourning, right? Not like this. But when the imam orders the Shia to go over and mourn him like that, for 7 years in Hajj, now people come over. But I heard he died a natural death. He's poisoned. That wasn't Karbala. I heard he died a natural death. No, he wasn't a natural death. He was killed? Yeah, he was killed. Who killed him? The imam allowed by, in this way, the gatherings to continue, remembering the resistance, what happened, who are the Abbasids? That's one side. The other side was that Mansoor had given an order, because again, they knew the tactics of the imam. The idea was, wait for the imam to make a wasi. Whoever the wasi of the imam is, you kill him immediately. So they sent the intelligence. Again, outwardly, we're probably mourning. You know, he's not our enemy. We poisoned him. But the intelligence is waiting. Just tell me who the wasi is. And after that, that wasi is going to be killed. So the guy comes back to Mansoor. He says, well, the imam made 5 people his wasi. 5 people? Yes. One of them is you. One of them is his wife. So what happened now? Again, the enemy, they weren't prepared for this. So in this way, again, our imam was able to hurt the enemy and to advance the cause. The hadith that we'll end with, the idea of finishing strong, is this one. It's from our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Salawat, please. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. He says, istitamul ma'ruf. So finishing strong. Afdalu min ibtida'ih. It's better to continue to finish strong. You've started a good project. You're pushing. Keep fighting. Make sure you take it to its natural end. Get the results. This is better than beginning something from the beginning. And we see that our imam finished strong. We ask that Allah accept what was said and heard in his way with salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
JazakAllah everyone for coming. Inshallah, just a reminder that our next program is going to be next Friday with the commemoration of the life of Imam Ruhullah Khomeini. Salu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. إذا وقعت الواقعة ليس لوقعتها كاذبة خافضة رافعة
إذا رجت الأرض رجا وبست الجبال بسا فكانت هباء منبثا وكنتم أزواجا ثلاثة فأصحاب الميمنة ما أصحاب الميمنة وأصحاب المشأمة ما أصحاب المشأمة والسابقون السابقون أولئك المقربون في جنات النعيم ثلة من الأولين.